Network Automation Nerds Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Peck Publishing. Are you ready to level up your tech skills? Dive into Python for security and networking and gain a practical understanding of security networks using Python. Plus, explore advanced Kubernetes concepts in the Mastering Kubernetes 4th edition. Whether it's network security or container orchestration, Peck Publishing has you covered. Visit peckpub.com via the links in the show notes. Thank you, Peck Publishing, for sponsoring this episode, helping us bring you valuable content. Now, back to the show. Hello, welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network automation, network engineering, Python, and all the other interesting technology topics. I'm your host, Eric Cho. Today on the show, we have an inspiring guest joining us, Eddie Chan, founder of Ironwood Networks. Besides being the founder and creator of this network snapshot tool, NAA, which we'll get into later, Eddie is also an early CCIE 5624 and a lifetime emeritus. And we should probably ask him a little bit about that journey, because I know a lot of our listeners are on the Cisco path. And I mean, I myself is much later, like 4x that number. So we should probably talk to him about that. And I'm super excited to have Eddie on the show today. And I know we'll have a great time chatting. So let's dive right in.
Hi, yeah, nice Eddie. To meet you too, Eric. Yeah, I'm very excited to be on your show. I heard about your podcast and I actually joined your forum quite some few years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, excited to see someone who is also very interested in networking, especially teaching people automation, you know, spreading the love.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of in the beginning it was a lonely path, but, you know, more and more, you know, if you just come out and say to the world, it's almost like what the book The Secret says, right? You just kind of advertise your desire to the world and the world will provide resources for you. So it's kind of like that. And, you know, evidently it attracts awesome people like you to reach out and kind of collaborate on various tools and topics and now on the show.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not a lonely, you are not the only one doing automation, obviously, but a lot of people desire to get into automation and glad that you are doing something like this for us.
Yeah, for sure. It felt lonely at times, but yeah, I'm sure there are definitely others. And right now, you know, we see this thriving community of people who are discussing automation, who are learning automation, and people who are such as yourself are creating companies, creating tools that are automation focused. Yeah. So that's great.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. So, you know, let's go back to before we get into, you know, your tools and the usage and how you came out to be, you know, usually I like to ask our guests, you know, the origin story almost, right? So let's go back to the beginning. Yeah. What led you into technology and, network engineering in general?
Right. So I'm a Canadian and I graduated in Queen's University in Canada. And I was in electrical engineering.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah. And after I graduated, almost everybody on the East Coast go into this big company called Nortel or BNL, Bell Norton Research. I don't even know that. Yes,
yeah. You have?
Yeah.
I remember Nortel.
Oh, yeah. Or some of their product, their telephone. Everybody know about the telephone.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So I happened to be fortunate to get into a the product called Passport.
Okay.
That is the product at that time to get into routing, switchings, networking. So I was in the testing team. So I got to read some RFCs, the standards, how at that time ATM was the technology at that time. So right. Obviously frame relay, IPX, Apple Talk stuff.
Oh my
and,
God.
Yeah. And they were still developing VLANs or Ethernet. So
this exotic technology called VLANs.
Yes, yes. And the Passport has like 16 slots. And then one card will take up the entire 10 megabit per second Ethernet. Mm-hmm. I may be exaggerated, but you know, yeah. Yeah, that was when I get into networking. And sure. Then I guess depends on what is your first job? Mine is networking. And then from then on, I keep learning about networking. And I met some mentor who at that time was a CCIE. And I was talking about, 25 years ago or something like that.
Right.
And
like the late 90s. Yeah.
Yes. And or early 2000.
Early 2000. Okay.
Right.
Well, for people, you know, you brought up a good point about, you know, what we would maybe consider legacy technology, you know, ATM, frame relay. But for people who are not maybe familiar with, you know, ATM, can you just tell us what it was? Because I see a lot of similarity, right? Like fixed cells, the 53 bytes, you know, kind of advantages. Then can you just tell us a little bit about, you know, what ATM was? Because I came from the same era, and, you know, OC3 was like the bomb by that time. So can you tell us a little bit about what ATM is? Just, you know, 5,000 feet overview.
Well, at that time, there was a lot of WAN requirement, like wide area network connecting, sure, you know, remote area or sites together. And sure, at that time, you have X25, you have frame relay,
yep,
and then they require a higher speed, more efficient way to carry packet. Mm-hmm. So they developed this technology of cutting up into a fixed cell,
right,
so that your equipment can know very efficiently, take care of a predictable packets.
Right.
So in a short overview, that is how to make ATM much more quicker than other variable packets. And they were able to run it on fiber, mm-hmm, typically. And mm-hmm, and it makes this, that's one way to make the internet, or at that time, to make the interconnectivity much more quicker using ATM.
Yeah, so ATM is not that thing that where you put your debit card in and get some cash out, right?
Oh, no. good point. Yeah. And Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, it's interesting because you mentioned mentoring. Because I heard a lot of stories from our guests that, you know, one thing that makes a lot of difference is you're meeting the right person, right? I mean, obviously, you have to be self-driven. You have to know your way around and study hard and all of that. But also the fact that you have somebody to guide you through, lucky enough to meet somebody who are able to guide you through, it really helped out a lot and kind of short-circuit some of these roads that, you know, you may not have to travel yourself to make mistakes yourself. So, you know, take us back to that time where you had your mentor that you were talking about.
Right. The mentor's name is Terry Schemer.
Oh, my God. Terry. I know Terry.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Terry was my manager at one time when I was at Amazon.
Oh, cool. Yes. He worked for Amazon.
Yeah.
So I'm in Seattle now. I'm glad that he also come over as well. I think he retired now.
Yeah. I think he moved back to Canada.
Right. And at that time, he is a very inspiring network mentor. Mm-hmm. And I think he's the first CCIE that I met. And that's how he brought a lot of us into networking and getting interest. And he has a way to explain networking so good, so clear, that really get me interested. So that's how I get into CCIE, studying and get into this networking technology.
Got it.
Till today.
I am amazed that Terry's name came up.
Good, yes.
It was not long ago I reached back to him and just see how he was. I would second your, you know, sentence about Terry being a great mentor, being able to explain technology in a way that's easy to understand. Because I was a junior engineer junior-ish engineer when I was at Amazon. And especially it was the first large scale deployment and, you know, infrastructure. And at the time was the beginning days of AWS. So Terry had a way to kind of brought me in as well to show me the path and kind of point at the right path for me, the right direction. And that really counts out a lot.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's how it got me into CCIE studying. And then, so that was in Ottawa. And then I moved to Vancouver and then joined another telco called BCTEL or TELUS.
Okay. Now. TELUS.
Yeah. And that's how we got the chance to further into networking, obviously reading Jeff Doerr's routing TCP/IP, right?
Yeah.
From cover to cover, right? And then we're lucky enough that since the telco, they have a lot of spare equipment, and we're lucky enough to, hey, why don't we just grab some spare equipment and set up a CCIE lab? Because back in that time, you couldn't really study.
There was no virtualization.
Yeah, there's no GNS3 or
no
EVA.
No, nothing
like that. So it's very difficult to actually study for it back in that time.
Yeah,
having that equipment and then gather a couple of coworkers. So we spend the time, and at that time, there are some books, but not too many study material.
Right.
So the way that we study was when you open up a Cisco new equipment, open up the box, there's always come with a CD, right?
Yeah.
So that's how you study. So I remember I printed the whole stack of paper from that CD and then read them all, and then that's how I studied for CCIE back in that time.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, this was like back in the days that you pop in the CD and it's like a CCO. Right now it was like internet, right? But back then it was no like CCO, like Cisco Connection Online, but it was similar to that. So you pop that in and it has all the documentation for manuals and for case studies, white papers, and that is where you start studying. So I'm interested in, if you take back, so I imagine back then it was like a 2-day test, right?
Yes, that's right.
So did you have any strategies for studying? And I'll be honest with you, I failed like 4 times. And not until I had the right study methodology mindsets. And, it's not just the technical stuff. It's an 8-hour test. And for you, it's two days and troubleshooting and all of that. So do you have any particular strategies that you follow besides just reading like manuals and documentation by popping in that CD?
I had no idea back in that time what to expect. I only know about the 2 days, and then there's a setup, and first day is all set up, and then second half is all troubleshooting. So some topics on what to study. So you just follow the guideline, the blueprint, and then try to read what is in the CD as much as possible, and then do your lab again and again and again and again until you know all the commands like the back of your hand, because you're not going to get time to think at all. So,
right.
So either you know it or you have to skip it and then do the next questions. There's absolutely no time. When the time is up, then the crew thing is that you get out of the testing lab, and then they call you back for the one that who made it, and the rest you just go home after the first day, and then they did it again on the second day, half through the second day. So I failed the first time, and then I made it the second time. That was very, very tense.
So I think the takeaway might be that like I said, I mean, the test format is a little different for me, right? It was 1 day already for me. There was no, I don't think they break anything, right? They didn't go unplug the cable or like mix up the frame relay ports or anything like that. But I think the takeaway is if you're going for any kind of expert level or lab-based test, you should really consider time management, right? Like you said, part of it is that you have some muscle memory. So I remember my strategy, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that too. My strategy was get layer 2 working, by a certain time, and then get layer 3 reachability, IGP reachability by a certain time, get all that ready, and then get BGP ready. And then you do the IP services and all the other extra stuff, security and all of that. I mean, back then I was taking the routing and switching. So time management was a really big part, regardless of what you're sitting for. Maybe it's the IE or maybe something else, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. And this thing carry over to your career, your day-to-day right. job. I don't know about other engineers, but you always have to troubleshoot something. And mm-hmm. it is, now we're talking about real money, because you're under the pressure
yeah.
Of the project manager or your customer that they're right. losing money every second. That if you work in e-commerce, you're losing money, so you're really, really tense now. And knowing the technology like the back of your hand is crucial, very crucial. And having some tool to help you is even better, right?
So hey, now you're talking. No, I definitely would, you know, kind of second the opinion about time management. And if you think back, right? If you work for a VAR, you get paid by billable hours, mm-hmm. right? Like, so the more that you could do more within a certain fixed time, the better chance of you getting your goal and getting that, you know, getting that PO fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And if you're working for e-commerce, like you mentioned, Terry, and I was at Amazon, when you're on call and there's an outage, like a tier one outage that, you know, impacts revenue, you could actually know how much money you're losing per second on average. And absolutely, like yeah. the pressure is just incredibly yeah. hard.
Yeah. I learned one thing when I work in Expedia right. is that my colleague was telling me that imagine every second you are at a building, high story building, and then you are throwing a bucket of money out the window.
Yeah.
That's what's happening every second. You're throwing, you're not fixing the network.
That's not a pretty picture, is it?
No, it's not. That's where the intense, you know, come in when you troubleshooting. Yeah.
So let me ask you that, Eddie. So how do you troubleshoot? Is there a particular, you know, kind of framework that you follow through? Like you said, right? You're under time pressure, but you can't just shoot darts in the dark. Maybe you can, but that's not very efficient. So what are some of the ways that you follow through when you're troubleshooting something?
Right. To me, it's not really at the time of the outage happened. That is, I recommend engineers to learn about your network mm-hmm. early, whenever you have time. I know that people are already busy, but whenever you have time, off your hour or some time, you know, get a mental picture or even draw out the topology of your map or of your network. Understand the configuration thoroughly. It's not easy, but understand as much as possible. But then, so that at the time of outage, you kind of already know the environment well, and ask people the right question. Ask right. them when was the last time things it was working. Can you show me exactly what it is? Because sometimes it's very vague from the ticket.
Right.
Get more information, and once you have that, you know, if you understand your network, you pretty much know: should I look at the firewall? Should I look at the router? Should I look at the, you know, ARP table?
Right.
That is the preparation is actually important. And preparing for an outage is more important than you just blindly going through your network and knowing where to look for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, if I recall my high school, you know, basketball coach, right? Champions are made in the off season. So if you apply that into the network engineering,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, your all-star troubleshooter is made in the peacetime, right? During wartime, that's not the time you look up commands or, you know, how do I get more stats? But, you know, that is the time where you bring up the previous knowledge of the baselining. And I will second your comment about you should know your service. I mean, obviously, in a large scale environment that we worked in, you know, Expedia or me in, you know, Amazon, Microsoft, that you work with multiple teams, and you'll be surprised on how many teams don't have a baseline of their service, right? So if you ask them how many requests per second, what is normal bandwidth and what is are the normal TCP sessions for your service, you know, usually they don't really know. And that is where monitoring and maybe snapshotting would come into play. And you would say, at least go back to history, you know, because usually the first thing you ask is what changed, right? When there's outage. So, you know, hopefully you could find out the delta between what changed and you know, between the normal time and now that when things gone haywire.
Yeah. And one more thing, and not everybody can do it is to stay calm.
Right.
I know that everybody is asking you question, and the PM is always at your back and, hey, what's the update? What's the update? But yeah, try to stay calm.
Yeah.
That helped you think, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I know at least for some of the environments I worked in, usually they have like a senior leader who's like kind of the call leader, right? So if you have a call that gets spun up, there's one person who's leading. He or she may not be the most highest ranked. There could be like director leading VPs, right? But everybody should follow that leader. So there's too many cooks in the kitchen. You just have to have like one voice and to say, what is the update, as opposed to, you know, everybody jumping at the person who's troubleshooting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of interesting because you mentioned two different type of environment where there's like the telco where, you know, the network topology is very different than a e-commerce website or a large data center or a VAR even. So, you know, take us through some of the differences that you experience when you go through in your transition from, you know, like a service provider to a e-commerce or a large enterprise site.
E-commerce and enterprise is definitely, I've mentioned a lot of pressure about, you know, the every second is very important. On the telco side, I find that obviously they have much bigger, well, I guess Amazon is now considered as a service provider as well. It's much bigger. The design could be similar, but I find that in telco, it is the volume that kills you. We have to purchase equipment that have to handle a much more MAC addresses, for example. It has to be able to handle a huge CAM table.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the design could be similar. Well, obviously, that's different a lot, but that's how I feel the big telco differ when we need to look for a suitable equipment or when we are dealing with designing to take care of all these differences.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, so in a telco environment for core device, you're not going to go look for like those 2511 Cisco routers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, if you go back to just kind of the evolution of the routers and switches,
yeah.
I mean, those high-end ones, like, I mean, back then, I remember at one point GSR was the bomb, and you have these like switch cards that you have to, you know, crossbar switching.
Yeah.
And those you don't sell to enterprise. It's just strictly reserved for, service providers.
Yeah. We need to have, you know, at the minimum is ASR 9K.
Yeah.
You know, MX series. Back in that day, MX960 back for Juniper. So,
yeah. So, is that I'm always curious about, you know, the difference, like what led people into network automation, right? So, for service provider, do you think it was the volume, the sheer number of devices that you need to manage that led you to automation? And how did that come about?
Right. It's definitely. It is. One funny observation that I find is in our industry, you have the system people, you have the networking people.
Yep.
For some reason, networking people takes a much longer time to get into automation, maybe because we are not a familiar with Linux or CL,
like command line
programming, scripting. If you look at the job description back in that time, now it's different. They're just asking if you know OSPF, VGP, that kind of requirement, but they don't really ask you, do you know automation? Do you know Linux?
Back then.
But now it's different. Now you almost like you on top of all these routing protocols, you need to know how to program. You need to know Ansible, Terraform, so forth.
Right.
So you'd be surprised that even in a big company or even in a telco, you don't see too many people take advantage of the automation.
Right.
So we need to change that, obviously. And many people have been asking to, learn Python, learn this scripting. And then back in that day, Cisco had this Tickle script that you can run inside, right?
Oh my God, I remember.
Yeah. So people were looking at it, what is this,
Right.
Yeah. And, but
you tickle the router so that it pings around.
Exactly. So those are very useful. And I have this mind-blowing moment when I was in school. We were learning this recursive programming. Sure. So we given an assignment to write a program that will solve the maze, right? So what I did was, obviously, to test your program, you draw your own maze, and then you use it as an input into the program, into your own program, to have it solve the maze. So obviously, I already hand draw the maze, and then I find my solution, the quickest way to get out of the maze, right? And when I test my program, it was just my own program, and it gave me a different answer, a better answer. So I thought there's a bug or there's, something wrong with my program because I created it, right? And it turns, you guess that what the turnout is, right? It actually, it outsmart me.
To artificial intelligence, brother.
Exactly. AI.
So it was already killing you back then. Now it's imagine now.
Yeah, and the ironic part is that I created this.
Yeah,
and you are smarter than me.
Right.
So why don't we apply something like that in our networking environment?
But that was back in school, though.
That was back in school.
Yeah. So how did that translate into your job? And when was there an aha moment where you say, yes, let's use whatever Tickle or Perl into Python into the networking environment?
That has always in my mind when I work networking. Once I know that, you are not taking care of only about a dozen router switches, right? You are taking care of thousands of devices. There's absolutely no way that you can do the software upgrade all by yourself.
Yeah.
It's gonna take months or even years.
You can. You're just not very efficient.
Yeah. We're not asked. Well, at that time, we were using Perl.
Right.
Back in that time, we're not asking the program to do what it can today to push a button and then upgrade all the devices.
Right.
Just to take care of the maintain stuff. Gathering version information, gathering Do you have enough space to upload the new iOS? Even those could be done by program back in that time. Until the point where you really need a human to push the button, then you do it manually.
Right.
But a lot of work a lot of task could be offloaded to programming automation, and that already saves us, at least half, if not 80% of your time.
Yeah, I had the same experience where the devices are growing exponentially, but you can't scale human, engineering time linearly, right? If it's exponentially and you just kind of have that straight line, that's just never going to work. So you have to figure out a way to, you know, maybe increase one or two headcounts, but you have to do much more work and save those time on your own. So I think that was the example that you gave.
Yeah, yeah. Work less, but do more, right?
Speaking like a true founder of a business manager, you know, do more with less. Yeah. But that's absolutely true. I think a lot of it was just, you know, like there's two requirements. One is by the sheer volume of device, like you said, you know, service provider, and the other was by the complexity of the services that you have to handle. So, you know, for example, if you need to apply a, I don't know, BGP policy, right? There's several steps that you have to touch and many, many devices that you have to touch, whether it's like a MPLS link or a BGP policy. So there's like this order of operation thing where a human might make a lot of mistakes or, you know, perform one task like faster than the other and screw yourself up, rather than, you know, your automation is always executed sequentially and you can ensure that's happening.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Accuracy is one thing that human cannot match.
Right, right. Or speed.
Speed too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So is that when, you know, so you mentioned Perl. So has that been, is that still your choice of language? Or, you know, you mentioned Tickle, which I remember, but I was never a... you know, sufficient enough to do anything useful. So what's your tech stack right now?
That was the only choice we had back then, right?
Yeah.
But now, obviously, everything is, you know, Python.
Mm-hmm.
And it already had come with a lot of good packages in Python.
Right.
And you just use that. And once you know Python, you can pretty much do anything in your networking. And there are a lot more imagination that you can you can apply using the Python, not just in networking, in many other areas as well. You can even, you know, with the Flask or Fast API, you can even have your own web, you know, entire web page set up all within Python, right?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I don't think Python does front end that well, but you know, certainly with the HTMX and Flask, Fast API, those are being changed. But definitely, it's almost like standing on the shoulders of giants, right? Like you don't have to do every like mm-hmm. previously. There was no SDKs, there was no frameworks, there's no very little, or like they're very early in the days. But nowadays. Part of the reason why Python is becoming more popular is because of these existing packages and people who are coming together as a community to maintain them, which is probably a segue to, you know, what we're going to talk about your tool in next week's episode. This is probably a good time to wrap up. I'm really happy to learn about your path, your CCIE journey, and how you came to the automation world. And in next week, we'll probably talk about, you know, your company, your tools, and get much deeper into that. How's that sound?
That sounds great. Thanks.
Cool. Thanks for listening to the Network Automation Nerds podcast today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other podcast platforms. Until next time. Bye-bye.